chi chi la ta ta ra ta ra ti la ta 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 ra ra ti chi 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 la ta 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 la ra ti ra chi ra chi la ra ti chi chi ri ri chi ri chi la ta ta ra ta. Well, hello there, gang. Hi, George. It's time for another report from the Cabbage Patch here. Hi, George. Damn little rabbits on the top of the head. We're kicking at little squirrels and our little vines. I almost said something real good there. And we've been booting the turtles in and out of the bushes. Come on, gang. Pick it up there, pig. Can I tell you about the guy I met? The things are getting so bad here in New York, you know, that I know a guy that was mugged on Sesame Street. Fantastic. Oh, things are getting bad everywhere. Well, on the other hand, they're getting good everywhere, too. Hello, porno fans. It's time once now for your favorite... Bring up Peg there. You know, I suspect now that eventually they're going to have late movies for consenting adults. They'll be... I've never consented to anything in my whole life. I got this nice sound.
Are you all ready in there, Mario? All set?
Check that oil pressure, man. Oh, man, I'll tell you, it's getting out of hand. All right, now I'm going to ask you a question, friends. Why, rhetorical, of course, so don't call up and say, hey, I heard a magical question. This is a rhetorical question. Well, now, all right, I'll make it, just lay it right out. Rhetorical question. Where is the only place currently in your life where you theoretically have total privacy? Where is it? All right, well, all right, you know what, right? The John, right? Them days is over. I'm serious, them days is over. I want to tell you, it's getting out of hand, friends. Listen to this, a little note that came out of the advertising column of one of the local newspapers. When the inside of the door of a public John becomes a formal advertising medium, you know that civilization has reached its total peak. Ours has. An advertising agency has formed Project R. Long-range plans call for 18-inch by 24-inch laminated signs. They're going to sell the back end of the John doors from coast to coast, from Maine to California. The project is being launched Monday at the Lincoln Building, with the Nemo Foundations as the first client. And now you'll be able to, well, you won't have to take magazines in there. Come on, bring it up there, big there. Oh, boy, I'll tell you. Yeah, I'm the cheek of their lumpy rasputans, and your lumpy belongs to me, yes, sirree. At night when you're asleep, about a butter to the batter, into your tent, I'll creep, 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 creepity, creep, puzzle. Stars above a shine. And they're gonna light our way. Oh, 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 oh. All right, Kazoo's done. Real good, Mario. Hey, you got the, since, you know, it's Friday, I might as well. Hello, test, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, test, 1, 2, 3, 4. Since, just worry about you. I've seen a lot of stuff written on the inside of John's. Now, I might point out, I hate to say this to the advertising community, a lot of the things you see written on the inside of John Doors are advertising, including phone numbers. You've seen that, Marianne. You ever called one? Check them. Well, all right, it's happening. Time now for our bi-monthly salute to one of the most... Get your scary music up there, please, will you? Time now for our bi-monthly salute to a great minority, which is now gradually being heard more and more of, and which ultimately is possibly going to be taking over the world. You know, I've often thought about that phrase, the meek shall inherit the... You know the rest of it, right? And it's all meek people, right? Well, there's other things. You notice that the Bible is very enigmatic about that. It does not say meek people. It just says the meek shall inherit the earth. Now, what is one of the most meekest things you know? That every time you even make a little slight move, it runs like hell, huh? Hides, sneaks around, never says much, doesn't chew tobacco. What is more meek than, friends, than... Ready, Mario? It's spooky time. It is happening everywhere. It's probably happening in your kitchen right now. As you're sitting there listening to radio, probably right now, under your sink, in the darkness of the closed cupboard, under the drain plug, a little party is going on. Possibly even a high-level meeting. Strategy meeting, or strategy, as they say in Jersey. Hey, boys, I've got a scratch on it. What are you doing? Turn it to 45. You're running at 33, you klutz. Come on, that's what's like hanging a painting upside down, you know? There. Do you know that a supermarket was forced the other day to close because of an invasion of... A little echo chamber, Mario. Cockroaches. And so tonight we take this salute. This concerned radio station would like to salute a terrible minority group. That's enough. Hold it. That's enough music. Love the music. We'd like to salute that minority group that all of us have been talking about for years, the cockroach. To cope with cockroach infestation, the management... Maybe I better not put the name of the supermarket on. It's in Philadelphia anyway. And they had to close for 24 hours. It was the third supermarket closed this month in Philadelphia because of cockroaches. Been fantastic infestation of cockroaches. And I have a letter here. It says, Dear Shepherd, we thought you'd be interested in this certainly historic event described in the enclosed newspaper clipping. At last, the mighty cockroach, as have other minority groups, have made themselves heard by actually closing down an organization. A supermarket, a prime example of what the millions and millions of years of the old cockroach civilization is capable of undertaking. And this is only the beginning. You people of the higher world shall be hearing from us in the near future. And let me make this perfectly clear. As, who is it who always says that? It's right on the tip of my tongue. Oh, there's some public figure that keeps saying, I want to make this perfectly clear. Whenever that is said to you, you know that there's going to be nothing but a great cloud of obfuscation suddenly emit. Oh, no, guys, there's an old... You know, there's something I've discovered in life. Whenever somebody grabs a hold of your arm and says, now, look, I'm going to tell you, this story is really true. Forget it. He is faking it somewhere. And anytime anybody, you know, assures you, you know, there's any male type will tell you that a girl who continually tells you she loves you, she's not so sure. I'm serious. You know about this, don't you, Mario? Or don't you? You mean you're just about to think about it. But nevertheless, here's a story about the cockroaches. He says, we, the disregarded and often mercilessly crushed species known as the common roach, common indeed, are about to expand 30-million-year-old reign over the other lesser well-adapted species to encompass the entire globe. We, the roaches of the world, demand that we be recognized by the world community as beneficial and hardy creatures. For a million years now, we have been crushed, obliterated, burned, gassed, and have been attacked by chemical weapons of your species. We have been disregarded by the evolutionary process of the Earth. Even the evolutionary process disregards us. We have been overlooked constantly, purposely, and blatantly shoved aside by minority species. We are a majority species, and we're getting kicked around. What is democracy about? It's the rule by the majority, right? In 1 million years, you people have advanced amazingly. But the cockroach, no. We have been discounted by the species of the world too often because we have not changed for over 30 million years. Why? Because we like the way we are. That's why we will win. The lowly cockroach can survive in Antarctica. Named after our distinguished and highly esteemed cousin, the ant. We can survive in the Sahara and haven't done. We can survive in the rarefied atmosphere of Mount Everest. We have even been, and two of our members are right now, taking up residence on the moon. We have traveled on Earth ships already to the far planets. We can survive the weightlessness of space. We will overcome the world. This is only the beginning. Signed, Roach. You know what Roach stands for? Roach, you know, it's one of these, every organization today has a bunch of letters that stand for, you know, like flip, snick, whip, you know. Roach. Roaches for overrunning American and Canadian homes. A subsidiary of Amalgamated Roach Limited of London. Beware. New Jersey is our staging area for North America. Bump, ba-dum, bump. No, you know, that's true, though. Have you ever lived in a place where roaches, I mean, seriously, have, you know, taken over? You know, I'll tell you, I'm gonna tell you, this is going to be very bad news tonight. I mean, for you ladies that are squeamish, somehow women have a real bad thing on roaches, whereas male types kind of laugh at roaches. You know, maybe there's a commonality there, but nevertheless, I'm serious, but nevertheless, I have on certain occasions lived in close proximity with our lowly cousin, the roach. And I've grown to admire him for his hardiness. I have grown to admire him for his basic sense of humor, which he has. I've noticed that. I've grown to admire him for his tremendous flexibility, among many things. And incidentally, this is always the key to survival in the world. I mean, you know, speaking of bear survival, this is WOR, New York.
Fall is a feast in the Poconos, especially at Fawn Lake Forest, where the leaves are a festival of color. Every weekend this month, we're having our Oktoberfest with 10 sumptuous weekend cookouts, swimming in our indoor clubhouse swimming pool, lots of prizes and games for the kids, boat rides too, and our own Oompa Brass Band to entertain you. So come on over to Fawn Lake Forest, one of the most beautiful year-round family recreational communities in the Poconos. Have a great day on us this weekend at our Oktoberfest. We're on Route 590 in Rowlands, Pennsylvania. Give us a jingle so we'll know when you're coming. And so Buck can reserve a pumpkin for you. Fawn Lake Forest. Call 297-3652.
Yeah, the area code is 212. It's an open housing community, and they will send you an offering statement. It's available from the subdivider on request. Filing with New York Department of State is equal to the merits of the offering. Area code 212. It is the key to survival. You know, if you can become fantastically flexible, no matter what happens, you can go with it. This is the essence of being a good boxer, you know how to go with a punch and all that. To be totally flexible is to survive in any situation. If you can become real flexible in school, you can get through. You can make it, man. In other words, be a total pragmatist and you'll do it. Well, the roach is famous for its flexibility. Now, the zebra is not flexible. I mean, you know, you take a whole bunch of zebras and you let them loose in North Dakota, forget it. They walk around, they're mad, you know, and they miss the old days, you know, with the palm trees and all that stuff. And the next thing you know, they're trying to walk all the way to Africa, and, you know, there's a lot of swimming around. They don't make it, see. But you take a cockroach. Let's say you pick him up in Tanzania, you know, he's living in there, he's drinking the gin tonics, and, you know, he's going to the beach every day. You take that little bippy, you pick him up, you know, in Tanzania, and you quickly whisk him to Greenland. You drop him. He hits the ground. What's he doing? Hit the ground. Is he hitting the ground complaining? Nope. Hits the ground running. 5 minutes later, there he is. He's eating ice cubes. He's, I'm serious. He's knocking down the blubber. And, yeah, it's like he never left Tanzania. Now, that is the essence of survival. Well, I want to tell you about, you don't mind if I do it tonight, do you, Mario? Or is this offensive to you? It is? Well, come on, say it, man, for crying out loud. You know what's funny about the, nevertheless, I'm going to have to do it because, you know, you rarely hear any discussion of cockroaches. People tend to ignore this. I will get more angry letters from people about a show if I discuss cockroaches than if I say do a show about pornography or, something really... See, I think there's a lot of things in our society that are considered controversial, but aren't at all. It just aren't controversial. People could be yelling that it's controversial, but it isn't. I mean, sex, no longer, it's a fait accompli, all you guys that are turning the underground newspapers out. Victorian mores are dead. D-E-D. Dead. 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 I mean, it won't be long before the Reader's Digest will have a centerfold out, I'll bet. You know, it'll be... It'll go way past anything Playboy's done. In fact, it is dead. Forget it. But what is controversial? Well, a lot of stuff that... Well, if you're really controversial, it's never even mentioned. Now, you'll never hear cockroaches discussed on the Johnny Carson show. But you'll hear sex discussed. Every couple of nights, there's a doctor, you know, some guy wearing horn-rimmed glasses, that's written a book on how to make it by Dr. L.W. Watanabe, M.D., M.D., a handbook of true knowledge of sex, recommended for all people who, you know, that jazz. Never hear cockroaches discussed. Why? Controversial, that's why. And it's a true, hated, despised minority group. Well, they're not really minority. They're actually a majority. And I'll tell you about cockroaches, you know. The first time I ever really ran into them, of course, since that time, you know, I've gotten to be quite intimate with many of them, but... this particular thing happened to me when I was a kid, and maybe that's why I've never been able to get really angry at cockroaches, which is like anything else. Goes back to your early life and how people acted about it around you when you were a kid. So if, say, for example, somebody in your family hates cheeseburgers, you know, every time they mention cheeseburgers, the guy goes, oh, wow, cheeseburgers, oh, ugh, you're going to hate cheeseburgers. And, in spite of the fact that you know better, you can't control the hate that you learn. Well, we never had any cockroaches when I was a kid. The house that we lived in, for some reason or other, and I'll just tell you, either we were lucky or my mother was a fanatic, I don't know, but we never had cockroaches. And I didn't know about them. I just, you know, somebody mentioned cockroaches once in a while, I'd hear about it, that's all, and I had no knowledge of what cockroaches were, firsthand, except I knew they were a bug. Well, this went till I'm about up in about the third grade, fourth grade, no cockroaches, see. Okay, friends? Well, I got to know a guy in third grade. He moved into the neighborhood, see. His name was George Doppler. You never heard me mention Doppler much. Well, old Doppler, see, he was an old buddy of mine. And that Doppler... And myself and Schwartz and Flick, there was the Doppler period. You know, all of you guys can remember when you were kids, practically every one of you at least can, when you were kids, that you would go a period about maybe a year or so when there would be a kid that would be a very close friend of yours. And you would hang around with this guy, see? And you'd see him all the time, you know, every night after school, in the morning, and at the recesses and stuff. Then all of a sudden, bam! You'd see the guy around, that's the end of it. You know that temporary friend business, Mario? How many friends have you had in your lifetime that you never see ever again? That you don't see? And you used to see all the time. They're calling you up all the time and all that stuff. And, you know, when one of those things is over, when one of your friendships is over, and it doesn't mean it's over because of a fight, you know, like, ah, you're a bum, you know, get out of here. Anybody that likes a Mets is a real slob, blah, blah, you know. It just sort of peters out. And when it's over, man, it ain't nothing more over than that. Because you'll meet the guy on the street sometime, you know, maybe a couple of years later, and you'll say, oh, hi, Fred, gee, it's been a long time. And he says, yeah, yeah, gee, all right. Yeah, I've been meaning to call you. You know, I keep calling all the time, but, gee, you're never there. And he said, well, same with me. You know, didn't you get my letter? No, well. And, of course, they said, well, we got to have lunch, you know. Yeah, yeah, well, well. Zap, you go the opposite directions as fast as you can go. It's a very strange thing. You notice that, Mario? This is, I don't know whether this is a woman thing as much as it is a male thing. Again, I'll throw that out for what it's worth, but it's definitely male. And so I was going through this Doppler period, and George Doppler was always sitting around there in school, and we were about third grade. Yeah, in fact, I know we were in third grade. It was Miss Robinette. And so here's Doppler and Schwartz, myself. And we'd go to Schwartz's house all the time, see. And Schwartz had this fantastic basement. And we would always go to Schwartz's place after school and do stuff in the basement and yell and holler and, you know, knock stuff off the walls and all that jazz. Well, one night after school, we're on our way back. Doppler lived a little bit off the beaten track. He lived on one of the side streets. And you know, we all lived in a line to school. Schwartz, myself, Flick, Bruner, all those guys. Well, Doppler was off to the left, kind of at a, you know, at a 10-degree angle off your... Off, and we saw you there. We never went there. Well, one night, we're coming back from school, and Doppler, somehow, Doppler says, well, why don't you come over to my house? So we went over to Doppler's house. And it was very, very interesting. It was a totally different kind of a house and a scene than all the rest of us lived in. Schwartz, Flick, Bruner, we all lived in, you know, regular houses. They had, you know, furniture, and they had, a house. Furniture, garage in the back. Sometimes there'd be a swing out on a porch, that kind of stuff. Bushes around the front, that jazz. Even a little chunk of lawn, maybe, that'd get mowed once in a while. But Doppler lived in this house that was kind of falling apart. And it was down by the roundhouse. Now, we had a roundhouse. We had a thing called the roundhouse in town. And the roundhouse, of course, was a railroad, see. And we used to go there once in a while on Saturday to look for junk. It's a big thing, looking for junk. And any of you who have never looked for junk really don't know what excitement is genuinely like. I mean, that's another male thing. But we used to go junking. We had a thing called junking. We'd go on Saturdays. Do you ever do that, Mario? Well, great. I'm glad to say it. Yeah, well, of course, there's a certain kind of guy that does that stuff. And the other type never knows what the hell it's about. In fact, I say all the way through life, there are two kinds of guys. They're the guys that believe in books, and they're the guys that just see them around. You know, there's a great difference, you know, between people that read about life and go to movies about life and guys that live it. Two separate groups of people. And it's a group that will, these people will never get together, really. And it's always considered by the one group, you know, the ones that get all their life vicariously, like through books and movies, they always think of the other group as anti-intellectual. Because they don't need books and movies for life. I mean, life is life. You can't read about it. And, you know, especially things like sex. To me, sex is not a spectator. And it seriously isn't. And any time anybody tries to get me into that bag, sitting there, you know, watching a Danish movie, a totally educational-type movie, I think, you know, I'm bored. Nothing to do with prudishness. I just find it dull, you know. It's like just Dullsville. So nevertheless, we used to go every Saturday junking. Now, if you've ever gone junking, you know what I'm talking about. It's a great excitement. You don't know what you're going to find. And we used to get these wagons. Me and Schwartz had wagons. And we would go out and go up and down the alleys just looking for stuff. And my mother used to flip. I'd bring home, I'll never forget the time I found a beautiful, it was in absolute mint condition, a John seat. And my mother said, where'd you get that? I said, well, you know, oh, it was great. I found it down, you know, back on Arizona Street. Back. She says, throw that thing out. Well, I was always bringing home stuff like that because it was junk. And see, well, we used to go junking around the railroad a lot. Down around the roundhouse. Do you ever live around a roundhouse, George, and all? You ever seen Ron? Well, I want to tell you, man, you find the most fantastic stuff. Like, for example, one day we were out junking, and me and Schwartz and Bruner and the whole crowd were towing our wagons around. When all of a sudden, one of us discovered along the railroad track in the weeds about 15 unused fusees. You know what a fusee is? Now, come on. All right, there's another name for it, a flare. You know those red emergency flares that they use on the railroad when they have some kind of a, you know, they're working on something, they stick them in the ground and they light up, they're red. There's about 15 of them there, so we, holy smokes, what? Can you imagine what a jackpot that is? So we took these flares, you know, and of course, naturally, the cops came, everything else, because we're lighting the flares. But nevertheless, the whole concept of going out and junking, and you know, once you have done junking, you can never get it out of your blood. Now, what form does it take now? Well, you can see guys. You walk down the street, like take a typical street like Madison Avenue, and you'll notice a distinguished looking man. Suddenly, he cannot keep his eyes off this trash basket. You know what's there? Now, some guys get hooked so much by junking that they make it their life work, just junking. Well, we used to go down to this railroad, down to this great big roundhouse, and they had a switch yard down there. Of course, they'd clean out the cars, and you'd find fantastic stuff. Like I remember one time, they'd bring these cattle in, and all kinds of cows would come in. They'd bring in sheep and cows and stuff like that, and you find all kinds of wild stuff that, like cowboys will come in with these trains, and you'll find a spur, crazy stuff like knives and all kinds of stuff. Did I tell you the time I really hit the jackpot junking? And to this day, I wonder about it. It was a scary thing. I'm out junking, see. Went up down the alleys, and we used to go back of places where they were doing construction work. And we'd go through, the swamp and all kinds. Just looking for anything you'd find. Just looking around. You'd be surprised what you'll find in the world if you just look around. Look down at the ground. Anybody who knows about looking down at the ground is never in trouble when it comes to tools and stuff. You'd be surprised the number of tools you can find if you just keep your eye on the ground. I would say if you're living in the average town, say out on Long Island someplace, if you wanted to, you could find, if you really seriously tried, you could find 3 screwdrivers. You could find maybe 2 or 3 pair of pliers. Do you agree? You could find dozens of stuff like wrenches, tire tools, hammers. You just keep looking. You just see something sticking out of the ground a little bit. You kick it, and up comes an old hammer. Well, I was junking one day with Schwartz and Flick and kicking through the weeds. And there were old barrels and old car bodies and junk like that all rusting away in a big vacant lot. I couldn't believe what I saw in the weeds. And there it was all hidden down there, laying there, covered up with weeds and stuff. And I, just walking through the weeds, kicking the weeds, out came a 12-gauge shotgun. The jackpot. A shotgun. Just laying in the weeds there. Now, it wasn't rusty or anything. The beautiful gun. I almost flipped. I put the shotgun, I knew this was wrong somehow, You shouldn't find a shotgun. People don't throw shotguns away, And say, that shotgun's old. Just throw it out the window. You don't do that, So I take the shotgun and Schwartz and put, they flip, fantastic. So we took the shotgun, hid it in the wagon, pile all the stuff all over it. See, pieces of barrel and pieces of tin. And like most boys, we had a shack that we had built. A place that was like a sort of semi-cave, semi-tree. Have you ever built a cave? We had a sort of a semi-cave treehouse thing in a vacant lot that was sort of like out in the country. So it was back a couple of miles back of our house. We used to go there all the time. We took the shotgun out there immediately in the wagon. I'm not like hell. See, pushing the wagon. We'd take the shotgun out in the woods out there in our treehouse and buried it under the floor, wrapped in an old rug. Why? Well, we knew We knew that you shouldn't, you know, 10-year-old kid shouldn't have a shotgun. That's what we knew. And so we had the shotguns, you know, just crap gun. Well, we had to get shells. I mean, getting shells for a 12-gauge shotgun when you're 10 ain't easy. You just don't go in and say, I'll have a box of Remington full choke, please. Well, no, you don't, you just don't do that. So we, you know, we're plotting around. So I'm going to confess something to you, that the mind of the junker is often also the mind of the criminal. Let's face it, he's right on the borderline, because anybody that, you know, walk around and take stuff, you know, pick stuff out of the back of people's houses, let's put it this way, he's pragmatic. He's flexible. So we're sitting in our cave one night, me and Schwartz and Flick, and Bruner was there, and our shotgun is under the floor. We're trying to figure out how to get shells for this thing. We're going to shoot the shotgun. See, so how are we going to get shells? Well, there's only one thing you can do. What do you do? That's right. So, Saturday afternoon, me and Schwartz and Flick and Bruner are at Sears Roebuck's. Now, you know, they had this big store. You've been to Sears. They had a big store. They had this big sporting goods department there and all this stuff, fishing rods, shotguns, everything. Now, they had a big, kind of a big counter, see, with these big boxes of 12-gauge shells. See, well, now, you couldn't take a whole box of those shells without really risking your, you know, your neck, see. Because, you know, 25 shells is a big box. You know what a 12-gauge shotgun shell is like. So we're standing there, and me and Schwartz and Flick and Bruner walking around, and we'd lean, we'd talk, and sort of push each other, and looking at things. A lot of people at Saturday afternoon. And one by one, each one of us slipped two, maybe three shells out of the boxes that were all packed into this big, beautiful display of shells. You just open the box a little bit, and you look at it, and you put it, close it, and, you know, you palm one of the shells. And so you only steal one or two shells. Well, five, maybe 10 minutes after we're out of the store, running like hell, you know, 4 miles we go, and each one of us has got a couple of shells. Now, what do we got now? There's four kids, me, Schwartz, Flick, and Bruner. We got 10 shells between us, maybe 12. Big, beautiful green babies, you know, those big Super X. See? So we run out to this place, and I remember the day we got out there. We got out there, and it's a beautiful, you know, this is the hunting season. At this time of the year, you always think of hunting and stuff. And I've never been much of a hunter, but owning this shotgun was one of the most exciting things that ever happened to me in my whole junking career. And, you know, as a kid, kids are boy types. Now, I'm not, I'm making no moral comment here. Boy types are invariably drawn to firearms. Now, that's why the most universal toy you see all over the world is a cap gun. The kid's got a gun, you know, a cowboy gun and all that stuff. Well, here we've got this shotgun with a beautiful single-barrel, single-shot shotgun. You know, the kind that you break to load. Have you ever loaded a shotgun, Mario? You know, the kind you break to load. And we would sit in our cave and we'd break this thing and, you know, pretend like we're loading it. And now it's Saturday afternoon. We've got 10 shells. Now, I don't know why I got on this story, but just thinking of junking, you know, you think of great things you find. And we've got the shells. Now, you know, the idea of stealing the shells to begin with, there's a certain excitement about stealing something. I mean, it's the edge of the law. I don't know whether many people realize that crime, people tend to think that crime comes out of poverty or economy. Well, you know, how many times have you heard that statement? That crime is because of economics. People really believe this. And I want to tell you, some of the most interesting criminals of all and some of the most successful are guys that come out of middle-class backgrounds. Dillinger was not poor. Dillinger didn't come from a poor family. Now, why do you do this? Because crime is exciting. Crime is really the ultimate excitement, you know? And so here we are. We're sitting down in our cave. Each one of us has got these shotgun shells. And we're very, you know, very excited, very nervous about it. And Schwartz is sitting there looking kind of scared. Schwartz is littler than the other. He's got a little short guy. And Flick is he's kind of on top of it. Bruner's saying nothing. He's crying. I've got the shells. But it's my gun, remember. I found it. So we're sitting down in our cave with our gun now. It is Saturday afternoon. 10 stolen 12-gauge shells among us. Well, then what are you going to do with the gun? You going to go out and just shoot it up in the air? No. We decided we're going to go hunting. So here are the four of us. Now, this area, there were swamps and stuff around there, and there were rabbits there, you see. There were thousands of rabbits around that place. We even had, squirrels, but mostly rabbits. You'd see once in a while an occasional pheasant, and occasionally, of course, what you really saw were crows. We had 28 million crows, and it is impossible to hunt a crow. Forget it. I mean, if you think you're going to hunt a crow, forget it. I mean, they're one of the, isn't that true, man? You just don't hunt crows. A crow knows when you're hunting him, and he just laughs. He gets up a tree there, he knows exactly how far a gun will shoot, too. And he's always 3 feet beyond it. Just 3 feet. Laughing. You keep going and going. Some guys have been lured all the way to the edge of the earth just following one crow. Well, that's right. I'm not kidding. Anybody who knows that the shepherd knows what he's talking about here. That is probably the smartest animal in the world. You know that how they hunt crows, and one of the ways they hunt crows, in case you're curious, they get an owl. An owl type, a fake owl. You put an owl up in the tree, see? And the crow is a natural enemy to the owl, or theoretically. And I've seen guys put owls up in trees. See, what happens? The crow, he spots a phony owl right away. Get out of here. I've seen guys sitting there with bushes over their heads, and they're waiting for crows because they're a great sport to hunt, but you cannot hunt them. So anyway, we're out this Saturday afternoon. Now, any male knows, the male kid knows the excitement of this. So we take the gun and we wrap it in the rug. We don't want anybody to see we got this gun. Say, 12-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid walking around the street with a 12-gauge shotgun. So we roll it up in the rug, see, we pretend like we're carrying a bunch of pieces of wood. So we go sneaking off down towards the swamp. We get to the swamp now, and it's a beautiful autumn afternoon. Boy, was it beautiful. And the sun is sort of hanging over the misty, cloudy autumn, October, November day. Now, out in that part of the country, certain parts of the country have different times of day that are special. For example, if you go out to the far west, dawn is beautiful, really beautiful. In the Midwest, especially in the fall, twilight is something else. I mean, it just sort of goes on and on and on. It has a blue, misty quality to it. It's kind of like a long, sort of drawn-out and you can see gray mists hanging over cornfields. It's beautiful, really, and especially when the sun is just about to go down, and you see the sun, the convection, the earth convection, and the changing of the rays. The sun will suddenly become flat. You'll just see it'll flatten out on the top, and it'll look like it's 100 feet across. It'll just lay on the horizon there. Everything is green and purple. Well, it's a beautiful afternoon like that. We're out hunting in the swamp with our found 12-gauge shotgun and our stolen shells. Oh, the fantastic excitement, looking for a rabbit or something to shoot. Well, we saw nothing. Usually the rabbits are jumping on your feet. We see nothing, no rabbits. And the itch. That's what taught me a lesson which I'll never forget. If a country makes atom bombs, one day it's going to get the itch to blow them up. Just a fact. Because they're sitting there. If you've ever owned a firecracker, you know that there's a terrible urge to make it go off. No matter what. No rabbits. No squirrels. Way off in the distance, there's a crow. Wah, wah, caw, caw. You know how they do? We are sloshing through the water about ankle deep at the edge of the swamp, looking for maybe a mud hen. We used to have a lot of mud hens out there. But no rabbits, nothing to shoot. And I am carrying the gun. And finally, Flick, who is up ahead of me, he turns and he says, "There ain't no rabbits." I said, "I don't think so." Schwartz, "I want to go home." Bruner's saying nothing. Flick says, "Let me shoot the gun." I said, it's my gun. He said, well, then why don't you shoot it? I said, well, I don't see any rabbits, because snakes are a little scary. So Flick says, give me the gun. I'm going to shoot the gun. So I said, well, okay. I hand him the gun. He flips the, you know, the brake lever, and it flips it open. You know how you break a shotgun. And he takes one of his 12-gauge shells. Each one of us was carrying his own shell, see? And he sticks the shell down into the gun, snaps it shut, throws the safety off, and here is our found 12-gauge. If you're curious, it was a Remington single-shot 12. And he's holding the gun, and he says, where's that crow? And you hear, way off in the distance is the crow, and he's sitting on a tree. This must have been like, a half mile away. He had no chance of hitting him. And Flick says, all right, you guys, stand back. And he takes the shotgun. Get ready with that, man. Hey, watch me. Get ready with that now. I'm going to need a little echo chamber on this because of what happened. Not yet. I'll give you the cue. What a scene. The sun is just going down. It's beautiful. Misty, gray, and was a little cold, you see. And about a half mile away in the tree is this crow. And you know how you can hear a crow for miles? You know, this crow, crow. Flick says, okay, here we go. And he raises the gun. He points the gun. And we're both standing. Me and Schwartz are standing close together. Bruner's now about 40 feet back. Flick points the gun. He said, okay, here goes. You, Flick, who weighed about 38 pounds and was tall. Flick literally left his feet and landed on the back of his head. Have you ever fired a 12-gauge charge? He didn't even know how to hold his head up like that. We'd seen movies, you know. It spun him around, and the three of us were so scared. Me and Flick and Schwartz, you know. Ah! Flick says, oh, I'm shot. He's landing. I'm shot. You know, fantastic kick. We dropped that gun and smoked. You never see shotguns fired in movies. None of us had ever actually seen a shotgun fired. That thing went off like a can. The crow, who was about 4 miles away, he flew up there. Millions of crows over. Rabbits are running out of the weeds, you know. Flick is laying on the ground. He says, oh, my God, I'm shot. We thought he was shot. We start to run like hell. See, me and Flick and... You know, Flick gets up and Schwartz and Bruder and Flick says, I'm shot. And everybody's running. Off into the weeds we go. We leave the gun. 20 minutes later, we're sitting in our cave sweating. We figure cops are going to come. They must have heard the cannon go off. Flick's got a swollen arm. He's got this shoulder, you know, it's black and blue.
Stay tuned now.